Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Oh, James, we're having so much fun bringing some of your friends onto this season's podcast. And today we've got a very special friend who actually used to work with you in the business. So some of your regular clients might remember Jackie Shears, who worked with you for a while and has moved down to the sunny coast and started her own business, Food Mood Mojo, and is a nutritionist.
Yeah, welcome, Jackie. Welcome back. Nice to have you back in the hot seat, so to speak.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Love the business name, by the way. Sounds really cool.
Yeah, good little play on words, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely.
It's great to see you again. And I know when you two worked together, it was always some really fun exchanges of information in conversations, both very passionate about getting to the root cause of issues and nutrition. And Jackie, you're especially very passionate about, you know, those kind of food, you know, meal plans and helping people know the best foods to eat. So can we kick off by you telling us a little bit about what you do and your passion?
Yeah, so within Food Mood Mojo, I really specialise in helping women with personalised nutrition and health. And so how I guess I really tailor that is I use my degree, so medical science is my background. So I look into their particular health issue, what they're presenting with, their symptoms, their diet, their lifestyle, all these other factors that really play into that. And then we look into particularly their diet, what is lacking, what they're having too much of, how certain nutrients can really help manage or improve their issues that are at hand, and really tailor a plan to their goals as well. So they're happy, they're achieving the outcome that they're after, but we're really working on the underlying cause at the same time without overwhelming them.
Amazing. And what sort of symptoms are people coming to you? Like, what's driving people to seek out your services? Is it for weight loss? Is it hormonal issues? A little bit of everything?
Yeah, pretty much all of the above. So weight loss, I find, is a really big goal of a lot of women. What I typically find, though, is that they want weight loss because when they think back to a time when they were feeling really healthy and really well, they were a lighter weight. So they have that like number in their head thinking that that's, you know, they'll feel well, their energy will be better, they'll sleep better, hormones will be on track, etc. And so I guess where I help them to optimize their health and get all these other factors functioning well, weight loss comes as a result of that. So they're happy, they're achieving their goals, but we're really setting them up for sustainable health long term, and then they're able to maintain that weight loss.
Yeah. And do you find that some of the foods they're eating, you would be familiar with James's phrase about the handbrakes that can impede weight loss. And so sometimes that might be because someone's needing certain supplements and things like that. Are you finding there are certain foods that they are or aren't eating that are their handbrake?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where we complement each other really well with what James does here in the clinic as well. Because the supplements that may be helping these women with the hormonal issues, you know, initially, the foods help long term. Like your food is something that you have control over every single day that is going to impact, you know, your energy, your digestion, hormones, etc. So if you're making the right choices majority of the time, it doesn't, you know, no one is perfect, but you're eating the right foods for your body, then whatever issues that you have at hand will continue to improve long term. Is that?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yep. I mean, I really, really like what you were saying about earlier about how certainly women want to you know, be a lighter weight because they associate with, you know, feeling their best. But yeah, we've got countless examples of, you know, women that might be, you know, quote unquote skinny or a healthy weight and feel horrible. So it's not just that, you know, the weight that's the determining factor of their happiness, but you're quite right. It's all the things that they do that gets them there, that makes them feel great. And that's really something that I think is great and a value that I guess people listening should understand that, yeah, the weight's, I guess, a side effect of all the right things that you're doing and all the good things that you're doing.
Yeah. I think when you feel well, like everything else functions. Yeah, like you've got the motivation, you've got the energy there to wake up in the morning, you want to make good food choices, you want to go out and exercise. And so everything else just kind of falls into place. So it's really just important to get the basics right more often than not, and then everything else flows.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jackie, talk us through some of the hormonal issues and symptoms that you're seeing in women and why it's so important for women to really take care of their hormone health.
So a lot of the women that I meet, I mean, there's so much information out there online now in all sorts of media, I guess. So it's not uncommon for a lot of women to think they're suffering from a hormonal imbalance and they just think that's the cause. And if they address that, then they'll feel better. More often than not, when we dig a little deeper, it will be either to do with their gut health, and that's out. That's something I see quite a lot. So an imbalance there with gut bacteria, it can be that the liver isn't functioning well, and that acts, you know, our liver acts as a switching station. It's so important for our hormonal health in general. So if that isn't functioning well, it's just gonna be like stagnant, okay? So everything kind of doesn't work. So that there's those symptoms that I see, all those issues that I see in a lot of clients. How they're feeling though would be like a lack of energy. They're quite like fatigued, quite sluggish, might not be sleeping well. Obviously there's the weight issue as well, or metabolic changes that are happening. Further to that, like impaired digestion, so they might be getting some bloating or reflux, and everything just kind of isn't functioning. So we really got to like dig deeper and figure out specifically for them what is happening.
Yeah, and you touched on the gut health, and I know, James, you're always talking about getting to the root cause of things through the gut, and food is really crucial to that as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Jackie and I will see, you know, very similar patient populations where, you know, they're tired, they're run down, you know, they've got decision fatigue about what to eat, you know, they're frustrated that things that they used to do are no longer working. And I guess a lot of what our foundation would be is to, you know, find out what those handbrakes are, address them, which then gives them the energy and the capacity to change their food. And again, like the gut's a massive one. So, I mean, a lot of people, I guess they don't understand the foods they're eating and the impact that it can have on their gut and their microbiome. So their gut bug balance, and essentially our gut bug balance is really a reflection of the foods that we're eating. So you can imagine some people get trapped in that cycle where they feel so lousy that they're just eating poor foods that aren't nourishing their gut properly, which leads to poorer, you know, energy, which means they can't eat properly, and it just sort of keeps continuing and spiraling. And I think the cool thing is if we can get in and sort of highlight, provide information around what it is, the cycle that they're trapped in, and if it is about, you know, doing a gut healing protocol and all those things, I think that's a really nice stepping stone into getting them to really put in place the foods that they need to, you know, be eating and make some of those changes, because most of the time I'm seeing people that are just exhausted at their, you know, their wit's end, and they just don't know where to turn, where to start. So, like Jack said, understanding those handbrakes, addressing them, and then that really allows them to lay the proper foundation, because if the body is given the opportunity, it generally knows what to do and gets everything right. So, you know, if you're eating well, and you're exercising and sleeping well, and you're not overstressed, and gut works properly, and all those things, the body just knows what to do. So it's not so hard, but it's getting them to that point that's the tricky part, knowing where to start with that.
Yeah. So, Jackie, let's really dive into what foods, you know, the majority of us should be eating. And I understand there would probably be, you know, different meal plans that you would recommend to different people. And look, I think most of us know, you know, the basics to avoid all the sugary foods and processed foods and things like that. But there's a lot of confusion out there. Sometimes there are foods that we think are good foods for us, but they're actually perhaps not so good for hormone health or gut health. Can you talk to us about some of those surprising foods that actually may not be as good for us as we think?
Yeah. So I guess what I like to focus on is what you're not getting enough of, like really spin it in a positive light for people, because it is quite confusing with like what we should and shouldn't eat. And I am a big believer in everything in moderation. Like nobody is perfect. And really just removing that pressure. I feel like we've all got so much pressure on us with life in general these days. So I'd never, you know, we'll put that on my clients. In general though, like what I like to get people to do is really make sure they're getting their portions right and getting a variety of foods in their diet. So making sure you are getting your fruits, your veggies, but protein as well, particularly for women with hormonal issues. It's something that I see quite frequently that they're not getting enough of. And particularly if you're leading like a busy life, you're quite stressed. So you wake up in the morning, you know, grab a coffee first thing, may not have breakfast necessarily, you rush out the door, you're getting the kids ready for school and you're kind of running on adrenaline. So you don't necessarily get that hunger cue. So you think, that's okay, I'm not hungry, I'm just going to go about my day, that's fine. That can be a really big no-no, because that can then spike cortisol and then you're just kind of on this roller coaster for the rest of the day. So what I say to women is, you know, it is quite important to have like protein with your breakfast and some good fats as well for cognitive function, because I find that's what I see like a lot of my clients struggle with, particularly on the back end of the day. So first and foremost, protein to start the day. But then the other thing is really just getting colour in the diet, really keeping it that simple. Looking at your plate, is there some, you know, variety of different colours on here? Again, so easy to just get stuck in that coffee or toast for breakfast. Lunch might be a quick toasted sandwich, you know, ham, cheese, maybe a bit of tomato or avocado, but quite small. And then dinner can be quite like a good meal, but they're really only getting that one meal a day. So
what would you say is an ideal breakfast for someone, like, you know, with that protein and a, you know, something that's achievable that the average woman can pull together before running out the door?
Yeah, so I will quite often recommend like a smoothie if they like it. For my southern clients, it's not always applicable, particularly with winter at the moment, but we might look at something like breakfast beans, so keeping it really light, so but doing like a mix of like beans and things in there, so they're still getting protein, some good fiber. We can add in some leafy greens and things like that, so it's still quite balanced, but it's cooked in advance. You can do almost like a play on overnight oats, where we look at using quinoa and a mix of like chia seeds in there too, so getting some omega-3 in to help. But yeah, again, I guess that's where I help my clients to reduce that overwhelm, because quite often they're already, you know, we've already got enough on our plates. So I will work with them what they like, what they dislike, and come up with recipes so that all they've got to do is look at the plan and go, okay, cool, I'm going to have that for breakfast today, that they don't have to think about it.
And I think, you know, like if they can, you know, sometime over the weekend or early in the week, you know, pull aside an hour to do some of that prep. So like you said, making some of those baked beans or, you know, cooking the quinoa so it's ready to go. And so I think that's a really great suggestion about actually having those pre-made breakfast things that you're just warming up the next morning. Good to go. So I know one of the things we often see for breakfast suggestions is like eggs and avocado and things like that. Like, are they some of the suggestions on that list as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I love, eggs, bacon, eggs with a bit of avo for breakfast if you've got time. And also keeping in mind that everybody's day starts at a different time too. Like some women are out the door, you know, 7:30 in the morning. So it's just not feasible for them to cook that sometimes. And that's where it's really important to, I guess, work with them and keep it simple for their lifestyle. So for those people, it can, you know, whilst eggs and smashed avo and things like that are great, they might only be able to do that on a weekend when they've got the time there. So if that's the case and you've got quite an early start, what I say is really just to, like, almost eat intuitively, as frustrating as that is, but making sure you're having that first meal at least before 10 a.m. If you're not getting any, like, sign of hunger creeping in. But otherwise, you know, if you're up and you're out the door super early, wait until you're hungry and go from there.
Yeah. And do you advocate like 3 good square meals a day? Or because, again, this is the confusion, right? There's so much, and because of social media now, where, you know, women of a certain demographic are getting slammed with ads for all these different, you know, new wowzer plans and things like that. So we're so confused. Are we meant to be eating 3 good meals a day, or are we meant to be, you know, having good quality snacks in between? From both of you, I'd love to know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I think, like Jackie said, a good breakfast that's rich in protein is a great start, because that protein will really help stabilize blood sugar and blood glucose across the day. So we know that if you start your day with protein, you're less likely to want to snack on, you know, dodgy things like, you know, chips and chocolate and things like that. And you're, and certainly less likely to overeat in some of those meals as well, because let's just say you skip breakfast and then you have like a toasty, which doesn't have much protein in it for lunch, and then sort of come that 2 or 3 o'clock, you might be, again, looking for food. So it might be quick, easy things like, again, chips, chocolate, snacks, things like that that you know, we all know that aren't necessarily great for you. And then you might overeat dinner, and, you know, that might lead to dessert. So I find with my clients in particular, if we start with quite a protein-rich breakfast, it definitely just helps stabilize them across the rest of the day. So they're not like binging or looking for things that they know they shouldn't eat, because when you're hungry and starving and time poor, you're not exactly thinking about, you know, is this good for me? Is it bad for me? They just want to get something in. So personally, I think because of insulin resistance, where people, I guess they struggle in particular with sugars and carbohydrates because their body is already resistant to insulin. So insulin being the hormone that comes out when we eat food to pull the glucose up out of the blood. So if we're resistant to insulin, what's happening is our body's producing too much storage hormone in response to those meals. So having protein-rich meals 3 times a day, I think, works best for most people, because you'll get that spike of insulin with that meal, and then you've got enough time for insulin to come back down. Because if your insulin is high, that's switching off fat burning and things like that. So if you have like a spike in insulin with your breakfast, then insulin will come back down, and then you'll have another spike for lunch, then it'll come back down, and then you'll have a spike for dinner. So 3 meals a day, I think, works best, because if you're continually eating small meals regularly, you're keeping your insulin elevated. And again, there's a lot of people that would advocate for that. And I guess the idea is that small meals regularly stops you from overeating. But again, it's from experience that generally doesn't work. And I think it's better if to just stick to like protein-rich meal for breakfast, protein-rich meal for lunch, protein-rich meal for dinner. And everything seems a lot more stable. You get that dip in insulin, which allows your body to actually tap into those fat stores and things like that. So that all comes back from the idea around insulin resistance. So small meals regularly might work for some people, but I find most of the time it doesn't.
Yeah, and Jackie, your thoughts on that?
Absolutely agree with everything James just said. It's a pattern that I see quite frequently as well. And if you can get that stable meals and enough protein in there across the day, so yeah, either breakfast, lunch and dinner, if that works really well for you, it really helps with reducing the snacking, which I find a lot of women really beat themselves up for. You know, they put it down to lack of willpower and whatnot. And when I sit down and go through that with them and explain like why that's happening, and going like, hey, you haven't had breakfast, you've had hardly any protein with lunch, like if we just bring that in earlier, all this snacking on the end of the day is actually going to go away naturally, because you're going to be full and you're going to be satisfied. You know, blood sugar is going to be nice and balanced, and you're just happy. You just cruise through the day. So, yeah, exactly what James just said. Very completely.
And I know when James recently explained that to me, and, you know, because we're podcast, people can't see that James is actually like drawing all those like peaks and troughs with his finger as we're going. You know, it made so much sense, and I think it's such a great way of explaining it to us. And because, as I said, there's so much information out there, and so I know when you explained it to me a few weeks ago, because I was complaining about the same thing of like, I don't know what I'm meant to eat when. So this podcast is really timely for me. Thanks, guys. You know, it is so interesting. And so you're seeing like a definite improvement in clients as a result of adopting this eating style.
Yep, absolutely. I think the latest stat is that up to 40% of Australians are insulin resistant, which is crazy. And a lot of it is just to do with misinformation, wrong meals at the wrong times. And obviously like food quality and things like that. But yeah, 40% of the population is insulin resistant. Having small meals regularly is bad news. They'll only gain more weight, you know, have more food cravings, things like that. So they'll just go backwards. And it's also in part because of our quality of foods as well. The more processed our foods are, you know, those processed foods are going to disrupt our microbiome and our gut lining, which will affect our satiety cues and things like that. And, you know, if you're undernourished, you'll continually look for food. Because your body says, hey, thanks for that meal, but I actually need some nutrients. So it'll drive you to eat more. So yeah, I think it's an important thing and to address. And I guess if people understand how insulin resistance works, it makes a big difference. And one of the tricky things is if you are insulin resistant, as you stop snacking, your blood glucose has a bit of a transition period. So you'll actually feel tighter in between meals and things like that as your body starts to become more insulin sensitive. So there is a bit of a transition period. It won't just be like, oh, I just eat now and it all just works. So that's why people get stuck in a trap where, you know, say they stop eating that muffin at 10:30 in the morning. They really feel like they need something because their body's used to it. And when we take that away, their blood glucose is somewhat dysregulated because their body isn't able to move into fat adaption where it can actually use fat for fuel. So there is a bit of a transition period with that for some people. And that's, again, where I'll often use certain supplements to help navigate that. But if they're starting with a really good protein-rich breakfast, most of the time people are pretty good with it. So if you've got some good proteins, which obviously usually will bring some good fats as well, that really helps to keep glucose stable. Whereas if you're having, you know, if you think like a typical honey on toast or jam toast, that's a big, you know, sugars and carbohydrates from a meal like that will really spike insulin, which makes you have more of a crash. And so if you have a big spike in insulin, then you're more likely to have a drop in blood glucose following that. And then people go, oh, I'm hungry, I need something. So then they might have another snack, and then they, again, they'll go up and down and they go, oh, I need another snack. So they feel like they continually need to eat. And it's a bad trap to get stuck into. And for women in particular, when they move into perimenopause and menopause, just those change in those sex hormones means they're more likely to become insulin resistant. So that's where, you know, they might have got away with, you know, jam on toast for breakfast and a muffin mid-morning and then, you know, toasted sandwich for lunch and, you know, yogurt in the arvo with a piece of fruit and all those things. They might have gotten away with that. But now because of the change in hormones, it no longer works for them, and that's why they come to us frustrated going, why has my body changed?
Yeah, 1,000%. And you touched on like starchy foods, so carbohydrate and sugary rich foods first thing in the morning. There's so many like traditional breakfast meals that are quite starchy, and I think that's a really easy concept for people to wrap their heads around. And it's something that I focus on is like eating the right foods for your body. And what I like mean by that is, so foods that we think are like good for us. So I'll use like a really good example of oats for breakfast. Most people think that's there's nothing wrong with oats, but it's, you know, perceived as this healthy, great option. It's quite starchy. There's a little bit of protein in there. There is fiber and things like that. But if you don't have good control with your blood sugar, there, what I'll find is a lot of people have that and then an hour, 2 hours later, they're hungry again. So that's when then they're looking, you know, for morning tea, and they're legitimately hungry because of the effect on their blood sugar. Whereas if they were to have, so we swap that and we do smashed avo on a piece of gluten-free toast with an egg, say, then they're not hungry until lunchtime. So already they're eating significantly less, you know, within the morning. They're nice and stable. Their energy levels are there. They're able to think clearly. But it's kind of how I show them, like, what these foods are that agree best with them and make them feel good.
Yeah. So, Jackie, can you give us a little bit of a rundown? What are some of those foods that do make us feel best, that some of those protein-rich foods that we should be steering more towards?
In regards to protein, what I get my clients to do is focus on the portion of proteins across the week, okay, and really making sure that it's the best, I guess, the best quality protein that they can have. So I'm a big advocate for chicken or poultry, purely because you're getting really good bang for buck in terms of protein quantity in that. Again, anything, so like your beef, lamb, fish, etc., is going to be quite beneficial. But then if you've got, you might be vegetarian, but you've got your beans and legumes, tofu, etc., you need to actually eat a lot more of those foods to get the same amount of protein as well. So protein-wise, I mean, eggs are great. Most people aren't aware, like, one egg is 6 grams of protein. So as a general rule, we want like 25 to 30 grams per meal. So immediately if you're going, well, I need to eat 3 eggs for breakfast to even like get close to the 20, it's quite a lot. And like, not a lot of people, unless you're James or, you know, a big burly man, you're not going to want to eat that many eggs. So it's just about finding what best works.
It's hard to get eggs at the moment too.
It is hard to get eggs.
There is
here.
An egg shortage. I hope your chickens laying?
They are. Yep. Lots of eggs at our place.
Yeah. Head over to James' place for breakfast. And so what other foods would you recommend we're including in the diets? I know you mentioned to me earlier about, like, you know, you get women to really increase the intake of leafy greens, for example.
Yeah. So really focusing on what I refer to as non-starchy vegetables. So your leafy greens, anything that's your cruciferous veg to start with. So leafy greens, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, etc. But further to that, we're looking at mushrooms, zucchini, carrot, beetroot, pumpkin, pretty much everything bar like your potato and sweet potato, where that would fall under a carbohydrate on our plate. But if we can get these non-starchy veg in, what that will do, or there's different compounds in those foods which then provide our body with a lot of vitamins. So, I mean, most people know we should be eating these foods, but they don't know why. And if I'm able to, like, sit down with whoever that is and tie that back to why they need to eat these particular foods and how that's going to best help them, then they're typically more on board. It's just something that most people don't understand and aren't aware of. So when you explain to them, like, hey, if we, you know, add in a salad and make it tasty, make it something that you're going to look forward to eating at lunchtime, that's really going to help with your liver health. So that's going to help you with your energy. You're going to feel lighter. You're going to feel more motivated, more confident. Like, that's really gets down to what they're, like, as a person is looking for. That's their outcome. And we can tie it back that way. They're going to be more on board with it. And the beauty of food is it's such a quick turnaround as well. So I'm finding within a week of following like a plan, these clients are just, they're feeling better, and they often don't know how else to explain it other than that they feel good. Like, I just feel really good, Jackie. It's like, okay, but what specifically is feeling good? You know, is bloating reduced? Have you got more energy? Are you sleeping better? And like, yeah, all of those things. It's just good. It's like, okay. So it's really hard thing to, I guess, to convey.
Oh, that's amazing. And I just want to circle back, because when you said about making the food taste good, over the years we've been told so many do's and don'ts about, you know, salad dressings, for example, or things like that. Can you talk us through about, you know, so even, for example, you know, if we wanted to cook some mushrooms for breakfast, you know, can we saute them in butter? And, you know, can you talk to us about how we make the food taste good in a healthy way?
Yeah, so absolutely you can. First and foremost, I'm a big advocate for making food tasty, because if you're enjoying that meal and you're looking forward to it, you're going to include that and have that more regularly. I find that that's an easy transition when we're looking to include more. Same if we're switching to like a gluten-free or dairy-free diet. Initially, it's just finding things that you enjoy, and then we'll, you know, find the healthier options as that kind of progresses. Yeah. So if you're like using, so good quality oil, really, really important there. So extra virgin olive oil, big advocate for. Avocado oil as well is quite beneficial. It really comes down to the portions, I guess, of what you're having in your diet. Like, are you getting a lot of, you know, seed oils elsewhere within your diet? Do we really need to look at that and cut that back? Are you getting a lot of sodium elsewhere in your diet? So I've got a client at the moment and she loves to cook meals, like your beef stroganoffs, you know, like really saucy, old style, home cooked, hearty meals. And so what I've been working with her on is going through her pantry and just swapping out those staples, finding things that are significantly less in sodium, because it's amazing, like particularly with like a gravy powder. Most people have that in their pantry. The ingredients can vary greatly between brands, and what I find ironically is that a lot of like your home brand brands will be typically healthier, so have less ingredients, less sodium. Yeah. Another interesting one is tins of tomato as well. So some can have up to 3 times the amount of sodium in there compared to others. So it's just and if you're having a lot of that in your diet, and we need to be aware of that for you and your like health situation, then it can be as simple as like just changing what you're having regularly. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Jackie, I think this is going to be one of the top tips from today's podcast in terms of, yeah, looking in the pantry and making some of those swaps.
Buy home brand.
Yeah. Buy home brand, cheaper, cost of living crisis. That's amazing. James, do you have anything to add on that? Any tips there?
I think, yeah, like Jackie was saying, you know, if sometimes when people, you know, change their food and they start to feel great, it can be the, yes, that they're eating more good, more good foods, or it can also be the fact that they're not eating bad foods. So some of those bad foods can create a lot of inflammation, and that inflammation adaptively makes us more tired. So sometimes it's, you know, it's not so much about being amazing with our food, it's more about the absence of the bad food that really gets the ball rolling. So as soon as we start to take out some of those less nutritious and more inflammatory foods, we'll definitely start to see a change. And then further to that, if we add more nutritious things, we're going to get great results. And you know, we talked about hormone balance before. It's the variety that you know, Jackie looks for with her clients, that all those different fibers and all those different vegetables, for example, feeds different microbes in the gut. Those microbes are going to help with reduction of inflammation. Our final stage of hormone detoxification is actually in the gut. So if our gut's not right, we can't clear those and balance those hormones. So yeah, I think it's a combination of, you know, getting rid of the things that we know are inflammatory whilst, you know, adding in the things that definitely help nourish us. Variety is the spice of life, as we know. So our gut loves variety. The more variety more varied our diet is, all those little fibers feed different bacteria, and that, you know, that I guess different bacterial species really create a healthy body. So, yeah, I think overall, it's been a really cool conversation about lots of things, and I'm going to buy more home brand, I think.
Yeah. And Jackie, it would be remiss of us not to chat to you a little bit about one of your other areas of specialty of celiac disease. You've mentioned gluten-free products a couple of times during this chat. Your son is diagnosed celiac, and I know we've spoken quite a few times in the past about your ethos on this. Can you talk to us a little bit, you know, first of all, explain for listeners who might not know what celiac disease is, some of the symptoms, and how food can play such an important role in treating that?
Yeah, so celiac disease is an autoimmune condition. Essentially, your body is reacting to the gluten protein. So gluten is present in, what have we got, wheat or barley, rye, oats, very similar, and wheat as well. So people with celiac disease need to have like a completely gluten-free diet, no risk of cross-contamination there. But essentially what happens is it creates a lot of inflammation within their gut and initiates that immune response there. So over time, we've got kind of little tiny villi, or they're like fingers that like line our gut, gut wall. And so they become blunted. So that's what what are they? They help with nutrient absorption, essentially. So when they become blunted over time, you know, that's where we'll see like the flushing reaction. You kind of eat and everything goes through you. It's not very comfortable. And a lot of nutrient deficiencies arise off the back of that. And then other health issues as a result because of the impacts to the gut. So he was diagnosed when he was 5. The reason, I guess, for his diagnosis was he was sleeping, I think, 11 hours at, you know, per day, and would wake up really fatigued as well. Then was having a lot of bruising pop up just from, you know, being a 5-year-old falling over, bumping your knee. And again, it was iron was really, really low, and vitamin D as well. So we're really fortunate for him that the GP we're working with at the time kind of was really on the ball with it. A lot of people struggle with getting a diagnosis, and it can take a few years because it can be quite complex, and you can have a variety of symptoms, so it can be really hard to diagnose. So it's a simple blood test, really looking at antibodies, and it definitely helps, I think, to work with someone who is aware of that and has seen that present before, because you typically don't miss it. So, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. And so obviously gluten-free diet is what you'd recommend to celiacs. And what are some of your other top tips for celiac diets?
So gluten-free, absolutely. Depending how long they've had the symptoms for and haven't had a diagnosis, they will typically have issues digesting dairy or lactose as well. So because of the effects on the gut and the inflammation there. So short term, while we're restoring gut health, we will typically remove dairy or at least really reduce the amount that they're having within the diet. Typically, once we've restored function, and so removing gluten from the diet, particularly for those with celiac disease alone, will allow that gut to regenerate. But once that happens, typically they can then like absorb or have no issues with dairy, whereas previously that might have had them rushing to the bathroom, creating bloating, etc., all the uncomfortable symptoms, I guess, that we don't want. But it's just creating a lot of inflammation there.
Yeah,
I think, certainly healing and sealing that gut lining after it being destroyed for sometimes many, many years is critical. Obviously wanting to restore any nutrient deficiencies. So you'll normally see, you know, celiacs prior to diagnosis might have low B12, low iron, and certainly low zinc. And vitamin D is really, really important in celiacs as well, because vitamin D deficiency is certainly makes someone more predisposed to autoimmunity, and obviously celiac disease being an autoimmune condition, vitamin D protects against other autoimmune conditions as well. So we know that celiac disease is a bit of a gateway for other autoimmune conditions. So it might be like rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis or Hashimoto's, which is a thyroid condition. So yeah, other than like avoiding gluten, I'd certainly be wanting to like heal and seal their gut lining, whether that be with powders and probiotics. Like Jackie said, look at other foods that might be irritating or inflammatory, and correct nutrient deficiencies. And, you know, out of all those, other than vitamin D, I'd say zinc is really, really important, because it does play a really important role with healing and sealing and repairing that small intestine in particular.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. Interestingly, though, with Hashimoto's, I think they've linked them both. So that's the gold standard with testing. If you're diagnosed with one, so celiac disease, they will also test you for Hashimoto's now, and vice versa, because they're just seeing them present hand in hand. But if we're ever treating like a thyroid condition, you want to look at the gut. It's not necessarily the thyroid, is it? Like it's,
it's the victim.
Yep, absolutely guilty.
Wow. And, you know, it just all keeps showing how important, you know, food, you know, nutrition is to, you know, to our overall health and well-being. Jackie, have you got a case study you'd like to share with us today that just helps pull all the learnings from today's chat together?
Yeah, I've actually been working with this lady and super interesting. So she had been trying, obviously, to lose weight for quite some time. She had bloating, like quite high abdominally, and had been seeing a chiro weekly to try and help with this, lose weight, training 6 days a week, eating all the right foods. She's a mum of two. But what we ended up doing was actually doing a microbiome map and really looking into the state of her gut. So that brought up a parasite and really low beneficial bacteria as well. So from there, we were able to like create a bit of a roadmap and do her up a protocol for 10 weeks. So first and foremost, really addressing so the parasite initially, getting rid of that. And then we got started in with foods, really then feeding the beneficial bacteria, taking away that food source for the opportunistic or the bad gut bugs. So we weren't feeding that. That then helped her with her bloating, and those symptoms there regulated her bowels. And then so the next step was really to bring in some certain carbohydrates, so butyrate-rich foods, so that will help with the healing and sealing of the gut wall. Keeping in mind we were definitely using supplements as well because it helps to really expedite that healing process. Food alone takes quite a long time. So we did that and then a combination of things. But at the end of the 10 weeks, she was down 7 kilos, the lightest that she'd been pre-kids, training less, feeling really good. She wasn't having to see the chiro every week to, you know, to help with that pain. And just couldn't believe that it was just to do with her gut. Like, she thought it was food related and was really beating herself up trying to lose weight and train and do all these things. And it can be that simple, but more often than not, people just don't know who to turn to and who to see. So we just try and raise awareness.
Yeah, amazing. And that's the great thing. As we keep saying on all these episodes, there are so many practitioners out there who do really care, who do really want to get to the root cause of issues. It's been fabulous chatting with you today, Jackie, and wonderful to see you again. So can you tell people if they would like to get in touch with you at Food Mood Mojo, how can they find you?
Yeah, so you can jump online, foodmoodmojo.com.au, otherwise on social media at Food Mood Mojo. And go from there.
Lovely. And you can work with clients remotely, like through.
So yep. We're an online health clinic, so it doesn't matter where you're located. We do phone or video consultation.
Amazing. Well, thanks for coming in, Jackie. It's been a pleasure to chat with you.
Thanks, Jackie. It's been great.
It's been good to catch up. Thanks for having me.
What a fabulous episode. We look forward to catching you all in the next one.
Bye. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.